Hey there. So it's Doug. I had to jump in before we send it to the episode because I goofed up on the audio on this episode a little bit. And I'm very embarrassed to say that. As a podcaster and YouTuber, I really try hard to make sure the audio is good. Sometimes the video isn't as great, especially like in a live setting where we're recording on the road or something. Sometimes the lighting's off or it's just a weird angle or something, and that's okay because usually the audio is pretty good. And I know how important audio is. I listen to podcasts. So anyway, in this case, it's the same little issue that popped up a few weeks ago, and through the scheduling and recording and all this kind of stuff, this was actually the first episode that I recorded that had an issue. The worst part about it is my good friend Jordan told me that there was a buzzing, and I thought, well, it must just be the furnace or something. It's probably not a big deal. And usually we're able to edit it out through the magical leveling and mastering of audio process. Unfortunately, the audio was so horrible when the buzzing occurred that we were unable to do that. The good news is our just wonderful editor, Chris, was able to remove a few of them. And the downside is there's a few, there's probably about three or four of them. And it's when either I am talking and it's important, which is rare, or when Jordan is talking and the buzz occurs and whatever Jordan says, like, we need to leave that in because he's very smart. And that's the reason why I'm talking to him. So there's a couple of instances of this buzzing. It goes away pretty quickly, and then it only occurs, like I said, three to four times, and I apologize for it. I am pretty sure it's because I had my cell phone nearby at the time and was getting a bunch of notifications. So now I put it very far away, and I actually don't know why it started happening. I've recorded hundreds of hours and have not observed that issue before. So that's that, and I apologize for it, and hopefully it won't occur again. I like to do, you know, in-person interviews as much as possible. But side note, since Carl left the show, I now only have to schedule with one other person who I'm doing the interview with, and that makes scheduling much, much easier. Typically, you know, when you're dealing with three people, it gets a little more complicated. And with Carl's limited time, it was really difficult to schedule any interviews except for like a specific window of time. Of course, people are pretty accommodating, so they would often be able to do it. But anyway, it's easy for me to schedule stuff now. I just need one person to show up, plus myself, and then we could do the interview. Sleep is so important. And if I don't get enough sleep, my IQ drops dramatically, and I really need all the help I can get. I also get grouchy and irritable if I don't sleep well. I actually track my sleep pretty closely with my smartwatch, so I could tell if I don't sleep that well, but also I just wake up in a bad mood. One of the keys is a great mattress, and I just got a Ghostbed Lux, and I absolutely love it. Ghostbed has patented cooling technology, and the Lux has the coolest rating in their lineup. They actually have a ton of different mattresses. And the Lux has a cool-to-the-touch quilted cover. Being cool while sleeping has been so impactful for me. And if I'm hot, I just keep tossing and turning. So the cool cover actually makes a huge difference. Now, the Lux, it's a little bit softer than the Classic. And I tried out Carl's. I went over to his house and laid in his bed. And he has the Classic. And it was a little bit too firm for me. So if you're not sure which mattress to get, you can go to Ghostbed and take their sleep quiz. It just takes a couple minutes and they'll make a recommendation for you. Don't worry, you get a 101 night at home sleep trial, and they have a 20-year warranty. And they also have a full range of products like adjustable bases, like if you want a split king situation, so you could raise your feet up and raise everything up. And they have bedding and pillows and anything you need to sleep better. And you can save 50% with the code MILEHIFI at checkout, or you can go to ghostbed.com/MILEHIFI. I started working with Mint Mobile in the last few weeks, months, something like that. And it's not just because of Ryan Reynolds, which I know that's a big draw. He's a funny guy. He's a funny guy and I like him a lot. But here's the deal. We moved over to Mint Mobile and in the last year, we've saved $1,080. I used to be on one of the big cell phone company plans and they wouldn't lower the rates anymore, even though I know there's much more competitive options. So we switched over. We have the 5 gig per month plan and it's about $15 per month. There's always like a tiny bit of a service fee, but it's right around $15 per month. And my wife and I each pay that. So it's about $30 per month. Before we were paying over $100. And the thing is, we use about 5 gigs per month each. So it's not too bad. And it's $360 annually. We do pay in like a lump sum. So you can lock in those savings. And previously I was paying about $1,440. So you could head over to MileHiFi.com/mint to hopefully switch. And the thing is, you could check it out for a short amount of time. I think there's some sort of a free trial. You'll have to check and see what is active over there. But generally, you're going to be able to save a lot of money, especially if you're on one of the big companies. So thanks a lot to Mint Mobile and do check it out. It helps support the show. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High Fi podcast. My name is Doug Cunnington, and today I'm talking to my good buddy, Jordan Grummet. Jordan, how's it going today?
Man, I am so excited to be with you here today. Feeling festive.
Yeah. I love the fall and this time of year. And before we get into it, for the people that don't know you, can you give a little bit of an intro of, you know, who you are, your professional career, how you came about to write this book, which is a, you know, huge answer that you can give, but let's hear a little bit about you before we dig in.
No problem. So my dad died when I was 7. He was a doctor. I thought, okay, I'm going to become a doctor just like him. It's going to fix this problem. I made my way all through elementary, middle, high school, college, medical school, started practicing, burned out really quickly, was looking for a way out, discovered financial independence, and made my way out of medicine, only kept the one thing that was still serving me, which was being a hospice doctor, treating the terminally ill. But then I did the big dive into personal finance because that's what helped me leave medicine. Started a blog and a podcast. In the podcast, I was talking about all these important financial topics, but a lot of times I couldn't quite figure out why we do the things we do, what enough looks like. And I found I got those answers from my dying patients. And so I wrote a book called Taking Stock, where I talk about what the dying can teach us about money and life. And a big principle of that book was that we should put our sense of purpose first and build a financial framework around it. But I went to market this book to give a bunch of talks, and I would give these talks and people would come up to me pissed off after my talks and they were angry. And they'd be like, stop telling me to find my purpose. I've been looking for my purpose my whole life. I have no idea what it is. I don't think there is a purpose. You know, you're pissing me off. And so I did a big deep dive into purpose, and I found that purpose is associated with great things, health, longevity, happiness, all these really important things, great studies showing this. But I also found that other studies show that up to 91% of people at some point in their life had something called purpose anxiety, this idea that trying to find their sense of purpose made them frustrated. And so we had a paradox there. How can purpose be both the most important thing as well as the most frustrating? I realized that there are probably two versions of purpose, not one. And one of those versions was probably more associated with the kind of anxiety and depression, and the other was associated with the health, happiness, and longevity. So I wrote this book, The Purpose Code, to help people engage more in that joyful version of purpose.
Great answer. Great answer. I'm curious, the people that came to you that were angry, could you generalize like their age group or demographic or anything like that? Or was it just all over the board?
So it was mostly people who put a lot of stock in getting their money in order. And so they did that. And then it was what's next. It was like, I've been worried so much about money. I've been figuring out my career and my investing and spending all my time in my spreadsheets. And now I don't need to do that anymore. And so a lot of these people were in their 30s and their 40s, but they were like, what now? And so they would look and they would search and they'd try a bunch of things and be like, nothing fits me. This version of purpose, it's not falling on my head. I'm not finding it. And so what do I do now? And so a lot of people kind of in the middle, just in the middle of life, right? They kind of got past some of those early struggles of what do I do for career and how do I make money? But they didn't quite still know what their goal was. What am I supposed to be doing with myself?
And you pointed out like there's a couple different kinds of purpose, which you go deep into in the book. And the other cool thing is like you've been talking about these topics for a little while. So other people are talking about big P and little P purpose, which is pretty cool. I was listening to our friend Paula's podcast, and it came up in organic conversation with someone else, which is really cool that it's like taking on a life of its own and people are going on. But how do you distinguish the two here?
So like I said, there are probably two versions of purpose, and one is anxiety provoking, and that's what I call big P purpose. Now, this is very goal oriented, and usually because we're Americans, especially like if you can think it, you can build it. It's usually big, audacious purpose. This is like, I want to be a billionaire. I want to have an 8-figure business. I want to become president. I want to cure cancer. The problem with big, audacious purpose is a lot of the times we actually don't have the agency to achieve it. We're not the right person at the right time, saying the right things with the right genetics and a whole lot of luck. And often that's what you need to do some of these bigger things. And so what happens is people spend a lot of time doing stuff they don't like to do in order to reach this purpose. And then they don't get there and they feel frustrated or anxious. So these versions of purpose are very easy to fail. And they're actually very scarcity mindset oriented. It's kind of all or nothing. You either succeed or you don't. And often it's winner take all. Like look at the presidential election we just went through. Only one person can be president and everyone else loses. So compare that to what I call little P purpose, which I think is much more associated with kind of the happiness, health, and longevity. This purpose is more associated with process instead of goals. So instead of looking at the end goal, what we're really doing is we're saying, what would I enjoy the process of doing? And you can tell already that's very abundance mindset oriented because there could be a million things that we love to do. And it's kind of impossible to fail. You start doing something, you either enjoy it and keep doing it, or you don't enjoy it and find something else. It takes a lot of the pressure off. It takes the stakes down. And so I like to say it's all or all instead of all or nothing. Get engaged, do this thing, and you're likely to succeed.
Did you have a big P purpose, say, earlier in your career? I'll leave it open. Like, did you have one that you've backed down from because you realized, okay, like, it is scarcity mindset. Like, I'm going to achieve it, and there's a very small percent. But yeah, what was yours?
I mean, becoming a doctor and saving lives in a lot of ways was my big P purpose. Yeah. And deep down inside, I actually thought I could undo the trauma of my father dying. I'm like, if I just follow his footsteps cosmically, I'm going to fix this thing. And so I didn't fix this thing. But the other thing is I realized I couldn't help everyone. I couldn't solve every problem. I couldn't make everyone better. And so I had this big audacious goal of fixing the world, maybe even to fix my own trauma. And it didn't work. And so I ended up frustrated. It was like, yes, I was helping people, but there was also tons of paperwork. There were people who didn't get better. There were frustrations and problems. And so my version of big P purpose, what I kind of hinged most of my sense of happiness and identity on, were things that I actually probably couldn't reach. They were a little bit out of my hands. And as I look back now, I realize that that was really my father's version of purpose that I co-opted because it didn't light me up. There were pieces of it that did, but it didn't light me up as much as things I do today, like writing and public speaking and podcasting. I love the process of doing those things, whereas there were lots of parts of being a doctor that I really didn't like, but I kept doing them because I was so excited about the end goal.
Okay. And you know, I asked you about your big P purpose. Is there an issue with not having a big P purpose? Like, is that necessary for someone or can you just operate fine?
I don't think we need big P purpose. In fact, I think big P purpose frustrates us. I think we definitely need little P purpose. And so, again, the studies are clear that increases, you know, your health, happiness, and longevity. If someone were to give you a pill and say, take this, and you're going to live 20% longer and feel 20% better and happier, you, of course, would take it. Well, that's kind of what purpose is. But again, I think it has to be more the little P version, things that we have agency over that we can do that we enjoy the process of being involved in.
Okay, perfect. Because I was like, I don't have a big P purpose. I don't think even when I was younger, I had one. I was just kind of, luckily, I think I identified little P purposes along the way. When it wasn't good for me anymore, I would move on to another thing. So I was always kind of learning and doing more. And actually, similar to you, podcasting is great. Get to talk to my friends, get to talk to new people, have conversations that we probably wouldn't carve out and just call each other on the phone and talk about this stuff, right?
And the problem is everyone thinks that purpose has to be like this really big, high stakes thing. And what I tell people is there's no rules around purpose. You just have to enjoy the process of doing it. So you could have a lifelong version of purpose, or your sense of purpose could last for a few weeks and then you could move to something else. You can have one thing that feels purposeful in your life, or you can have 10. Your version of purpose may kind of obviously change the world, but it doesn't necessarily have to. There are really no rules except do things that deeply engage you, that get you excited, where you enter that kind of flow state where you're so excited and enjoying it, you're not worried about the goal anymore. If you can spend more of your time doing those type of things, I think that's what winning the game actually looks like.
So a lot of the audience is more advanced with FI or the sort of work optional or early retirement journey. They probably have the basics down, they're in the accumulation stage, or maybe they've already retired. And do you have any strategies or frameworks to help people start testing things? And I have another similar question that's a little bit different, but yeah, how can we like start testing some of these small P purposes and focus on just living life and having good days day after day?
So here's the big mistake everyone makes. They think you're supposed to find your purpose. And I always tell people, you don't really find your purpose, you build or create it. But it is true, we have to have some inklings, some beckonings towards things that are important to us to build that life of purpose around. So I call those purpose anchors. So when we're looking at little P purpose, what we want to do is identify some purpose anchors and then build a life of purpose around them. And there's some really simple things, some simple exercises you can do to start thinking about what your purpose anchors are. Let me speak about four of them really, really quickly. So the first one is a life review. It was the structured series of questions where we ask them about their lives and their triumphs and their disasters and the important people in their life, et cetera, et cetera. But what it comes down to and what's important for us looking for our purpose anchors is regret. So I often ask people, if you found out you were going to die tomorrow, what would you regret never having the energy, courage, or time to do? And a dying person, that's really frustrating because you don't have agency or time or energy to fix that. But in a young, healthy person, you can turn regret around into a purpose anchor. If you know on your deathbed you're going to regret something, let's start building a life of purpose around it. So that's a really easy way to start thinking about purpose anchors. Another really easy way is to start thinking about your joys of childhood. A lot of time when we're kids, we really do have a sense of purpose and play, and we don't worry about goals or outcomes. We go out, we play cops and robbers all day, and we forget our time, and we miss dinner. If you start thinking about your joys of childhood, those can often be purpose anchors. Think about what the posters were in your room. What were the trophies? What were the drawings? When I was a little kid, I loved baseball cards. Every time I see baseball cards on Facebook or in the newspaper, my brain lights up. I just don't have enough time to pursue it because I have all sorts of other versions of little P purpose. But that joy of childhood would be a wonderful purpose anchor if I was really searching to build a life of purpose around something new. So that's the second mode, the joys of childhood. The third mode is what I call the art of subtraction. Most people are currently working and a lot of people don't like their jobs, but if you really narrow it down, there's one or two things they do like. Maybe they love stocking the stock room every Thursday morning and they do it for an hour and it's their moment of bliss because they like organizing things. Well, hell, you might hate the rest of your job, but that hour could be a purpose anchor. And last but not least, if nothing else is working, the joys of childhood, regrets, the art of subtraction, none of that's helping you with purpose anchors, throw a bunch of spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks. It's the spaghetti method. Try a bunch of new things, volunteer for new activities, hang out with new people, say yes to things you'd normally say no to. And if you have a great day, that could be the beginning of a new purpose anchor where you can build a life of purpose around it. So those are kind of four straightforward exercises you can do to start identifying those purpose anchors to build around.
That's perfect. And like everyone, I'm thinking of myself as you're answering the question. And I've done a decent job for a couple of these. The one that jumped out is the joys from childhood. So, you know, I'd go outside, run around. I don't even know what we would do. We'd like dig a hole or like walk in a dirty creek or whatever and just get dirty, which is just, you know, going out in the wilderness and hiking and just doing stuff like that. The other is guitar. I got a guitar when I was a kid. I really liked like Poison and Guns N' Roses, symptom of the time that I grew up. But I took a couple guitar lessons, and now like I love guitars. It's a great way to spend some time, exercise my mind and develop dexterity. And I'm not that good at it. Like, you have to work hard just to like just play for no one, just play for myself. So it's a pretty fun thing. I'm curious, did you, maybe for the subtraction or the spaghetti method, did you do anything? I imagine this book has a lot of self-reflection and your own examples, right?
Yeah, I mean, so hospice work for me was totally the art of subtraction. I took everything I was doing at work, and I was tired of the nights on call. I was tired of the weekends. I was tired of owning my own practice. I was tired of the nursing homework. And as I got rid of all those things, the one thing I was left with was the thing that I would do even if I wasn't being paid for it. And so the art of subtraction was a major way in which I recognized that being a hospice physician, even though I no longer really identified as a physician anymore, was still important to me. And I think the spaghetti method, I think we use it all the time in life. Like, I had no idea I was going to like podcasting. Someone said, hey, let's make a podcast together. And I said, yes. That was it. I said yes to something I might not have normally said yes to. And I tried it. And I found that it lit me up and excited me. And for me, podcasting is little P purpose. Don't get me wrong. I do have some goals. Like, I would love to get 1 million downloads every month. But, and this is important, if I hung my hat on that as my version of purpose and happiness, I'd find myself frustrated because it's really hard to get 1 million downloads a month. On the other hand, I can concentrate on things like being a better interviewer and maybe listening to other podcasters and maybe studying up a little bit on how to make my podcast better. That's something I have agency over. That's incremental gain. But most important for me with podcasting is from the moment I get behind the mic and start interviewing someone till that hour is finished, I'm totally enjoying myself. And even if not a single person listens to that episode, it was still well worth my time. It still felt very purposeful. And so the idea is kind of to be a little bit goal agnostic. It doesn't mean you can't have goals. It doesn't mean you can't even enjoy meeting goals. It just means that the goal is not the thing you're really shooting for.
Do you have a suggestion for the real type A kind of people who they have the goal in mind and they're like, okay, I'm going to ignore the goal, focus on the process and the systems and just be happy with it. But you know, it's in the back of their mind and they're like looking at those 1 million downloads. How do you shut that off? Any tips?
So here is the really rough part of this conversation. And it really has to do with the difference between meaning and purpose. And let me explain why. A lot of people think meaning and purpose are the same thing. I don't, but I think you need both of them to be happy. So let me explain the difference and why this is important to this conversation. Meaning is about how we look at our past, and it's all about our thoughts. So it has to do with your past and your thoughts. It's how you cognitively interpret the trauma you've been through. Happy people tend to tell themselves heroic stories. I came up against this trauma. It was really hard, but I lived through it. And that's why I am the person I am today. And so when I move into the present and future, I'm probably going to be just as successful. Unhappy people tend to tell them victim stories. I went through this trauma. It thwarted me. I could never end up being what I wanted to be. And that's why I am where I am today. And in the present and future, it's going to continue thwarting me. The journey of meaning is to enough. People who have that heroic story, basically what you're saying is, I was enough back then. I made it through and I'm doing better today. The people who tell themselves a victim story basically said, I was never enough to overcome all these things thwarting me. That's meaning. Purpose is about the present and future, and it's all about actions. It's basically about the things we do to fill us up on a day-to-day basis. People who are type A personalities generally don't have a great sense of meaning and they don't think they're enough. But instead of going back and getting therapy and really examining their past and their stories and their narratives, they try to purpose their way to enough. So they skip meaning and they're just like, well, if I make this big goal my purpose and I achieve that purpose, I'll finally feel that I'm enough. And so they try to purpose their way to enough. They try to purpose their way to happiness, and it just doesn't work. And we know this because we have tons of examples in pop culture. Steve Jobs, perfect example, right? Steve Jobs was one of the most successful people ever, made tons and tons of money, but he never really looked happy. Why? Because he probably had some issues around meaning. He had to go back and really look at those narratives about, oh, I was adopted. What did that mean? Did that mean my parents didn't love me? He probably never worked through those things. I would say Elon Musk is the same thing. That guy is arguably the most successful and richest guy in the world, and yet never seems satisfied or happy. they have meaning problems, not purpose problems. And so I think this really is the same issue with type A personalities. When they're setting all these achievements and goals in front of them, they're trying to prove that they're enough, and purpose never does that. You got to go back and get a better sense of meaning, really tell yourself better stories about your past in such a way that you were enough back then, so you don't have to prove you're enough now through achieving things.
Okay. It sounds like that's hard.
It is. Doug, all of this is hard. Meaning is hard. And guess what? Purpose is hard. You've got to get off your duff and actually create a life of purpose. It's not just going to find you. It is not passive. Like I said, purpose is about present and future, and it's about action. You've actually got to take action.
Okay. So we have another question here, a little different, but I think it fits in. So Amber wrote an email about switching careers. And there's a potential, I think, for her to find a job that maybe has more meaning, purpose, or helps her along the journey. She's in great shape. She's 27. She's about 30% to her FI number. Her job is mostly fine, but not that great. And her specific question is, how would you go about finding a job you enjoy if you're trying to completely switch careers? So I know it's a little bit adjacent, but how can she take this opportunity to move in the right direction for, you know, just being happy with a little P purpose?
So let me give you a framework. And I think this is what winning the game really looks like. From we're born to the day we die, we get a certain amount of time. We don't know how much that is. And yes, if you wear your seatbelt and exercise and don't smoke, you might get a little more time. But generally, it's kind of predetermined and we don't have a huge amount of control over it. So what is winning the game? Winning the game is taking as many of those time slots as possible and filling them in with good stuff, right? Because we have no control over time. We can't buy it. We can't sell it. We can't trade it. We can't change it. The only thing we can do is maybe control the activities we're involved in as time passes. And so your goal is to fill those time slots, those days, weeks, hours, or years with as much meaningful, purposeful stuff as possible and as little stuff that you loathe. And so we're talking about your friend Amber here, and she's trying to figure out, can I switch jobs? What can I do? What do I have agency over to improve my sense of purpose and to be happier? And I would say that someone like Amber has three main levers to help live a more purposeful life, to basically improve that calculus of their yearly schedule of spending more time doing things you love and less time doing things you loathe. What are those three levers? There is the joy of addition. So Amber could do the same exact job, but during her off hours could do some purposeful activity. And when she looked at the end of the year, she would spend more time doing purposeful things than she'd had the year before. So the joy of addition she could use even if she didn't change her job. Now, she could also look at her job and say, okay, my job is so-so, but maybe I could volunteer for some extra things which I really love. Maybe it'll make me some extra money at the job. Maybe I'll just enjoy being at the job more. So she can use the joy of addition. Then there's the art of subtraction. The art of subtraction is getting rid of things you loathe. So maybe there's a lot she doesn't like at her job, and she can take the two or three things that she hates the most and try to get rid of those and maybe spend more time doing things that are either mediocre or that she loves. Maybe she can go to her boss and say, you know what? I really hate stocking the stock room every Thursday. Can someone else do that? And that day I'll do their job instead. And so you can use the art of subtraction to at least get rid of some things you loathe. And last but not least, there's substitution. So maybe if you don't love your job, you can work for a different boss at the same company, and maybe that'll improve things. Or maybe you can do a different job in the same company, or maybe you can do the same job in a different company, but you're substituting things out. The key is you want to use those levers, the joy of addition, the art of subtraction, and substitution, to basically improve how you spend your time. I say spend, but really the activities you are doing as that time passes. And so I think that's what Amber needs to look at. If she's looking at comparing one job to the next, the question is, what does she gain and what does she lose? What does she lose when it comes to income versus what does she gain in it has to do with spending her time doing things she likes to do? And then it's a trade-off. But the goal is, from the time we're really young to the time we die, we want to make that calculus better and better and better. We want to spend more time doing things that are purposeful that we love and less time doing things we loathe. money is a great tool. So when you are to financial independence, you can then use that tool in order to pay other people to keep you from cleaning your toilets and doing things you don't like, right? But money is only one tool. We have other tools. We have our youth. We have our energy. We have our interests. We have our community. We have our joys. We have our passions. So let's say Amber lives in the same community that her parents live in. Maybe she could stop renting an apartment and move in with her parents, which maybe saves her some money every week. And then instead of working 40 hours a week, she could work 36 hours a week or 32 hours a week, same job, but now she has an extra 6 or 8 hours a week. She didn't use money to do that. She actually used one of those other tools she had in her toolkit, which was her community and her family living close. So there are lots of ways to slice this pie, but the end goal is we want to spend more time doing things that light us up.
Ironically, Amber has a house and her parents moved in with her already. So she's house hacking with her parents, which is a great money saving thing already. So like I said, she's in a great position. If I had my head on my shoulders when I was 27 like that, I would be so far ahead. But everything's great. Everything worked out great. But okay, Amber, we got a little bit of an answer there. And you know, one thing we keep hitting on is subtraction. I really like to remove the negatives. That has been one of the biggest things. And for me with the job, it was either travel or commuting, the actual job, the team. I had a hard time, I guess, but it was great when I got out of the corporate structure. Like many things, if you take it too far, right? So if I'm removing negatives, I'm adding positives, you could take it too far. Can you think of any examples where maybe someone needs to throttle down and like, actually, this challenge is a good thing that you should spend some time doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a few cases. One is the obvious, like if you throttle down too much and you get rid of all your ways of making money, you're going to have issues. And so, you know, I'm not Pollyanna about this. We have to be thoughtful, but sometimes you got to do things you don't love doing because it makes you money. And that's okay. We just need to be intentional about how we spend the rest of our time and also be looking for ways we can improve that continuously. The other thing is a lot of times we sometimes have to spend a little bit of time doing something we don't like in service of something we do like. So let me give you a great example. I love doing my podcast. I love interviewing people. I don't love editing my podcast. So I have the tool of money where I could pay someone to do that. But sometimes you don't want to use money for everything. I also have sweat equity. I can use some of my time doing something that I don't love in service of something I do love, which is podcasting and making this podcast. When it becomes a problem is when you're spending all your time in service of something you love and you're spending tons of time doing stuff you don't love just for brief periods of doing things you do love. And that's where we get into goals, right? Because then we're starting to talk about the bigger audacious goals. We're spending 90% of your time doing something you don't like in the process just to get to this one overwhelming goal. But the problem is a lot of times those goals last for a short period of time and then we're back to our baseline. We hedonically adapt. And even if we reach that goal, our happiness decreases over time. And then we're back to where we started doing things we don't like in service of the short period of time. We're actually achieving something we do like. So I think it's fine to do some things you don't love in service of something you do, as long as you're intentional about it and it doesn't start taking up more and more and more of your time.
You have a son and daughter you mentioned. How were you, this is an advanced topic, right? Purpose and meaning. How were you trying to give them maybe some of the tools without hitting them over the head with it, where they're like, all right, Dad, I don't really want to hear this from you right now. But yeah, how are you trying to teach them about this at younger ages?
So here's the wonderful thing. We all know what generational trauma is, especially if you're in the personal finance world. You've heard of this idea of money scripts. Your parents hand you down a set of coping skills, which sometimes aren't the best, right? They have trauma. They went through hard things. They develop stories about those hard things and they foist them on you. And so if your parents were bad with money, a lot of times they hand that down and you become bad with money. So that's the negative side. But let's look at the other side of what I call generational growth. When your parents are really good at things and they hand you down these great habits and these great abilities, you grow and it serves you long term. So with my kids, I don't spend a lot of time telling them how to be or even explaining what purpose should look like in their life. I model the behavior of someone who is pursuing joyfully little p purpose, who's using that to connect to others and building a rich life around myself. And I think that's the generational growth they need to see, because ultimately I want them to feel that they have the agency to do that themselves when they become adults. I want them to pursue joyful things that light them up. And so the best way to give them permission to do that is to have them see me doing the same exact thing. So they see me podcasting, they see me writing books, they see me public speaking, all things that really light me up. And that model, I think, is the best teaching I can give them for how I hope they'll be when they grow up.
What was the most challenging thing about writing this book?
So what's really challenging about purpose is to take it from something that's really ephemeral and hard to get your brain around to something that's much more simple, straightforward, abundant, tactile, something we can play with and mess around with and feel comfortable manipulating. And I think that's what I felt was missing from the literature is, okay, we have all these ideas of purpose, but how do we make this into something that feels usable to your average person? And so that was why what I really struggled with is how to make it kind of clear and concise, give people some exercises and some real advice on what this looks like in real life for your average person.
And is there a part of the book that you really want to connect with the reader, but maybe you're a little bit nervous if they're going to receive it that way?
Well, ultimately, what really people get stuck on is this idea, well, I hear you, little P purpose better than big P purpose, but I like big P purpose because there's more impact there. I'm going to change the world more if I do this, if I become a billionaire, if I cure cancer. They think it's going to give them more legacy. So the last part of the book really talks about how little P purpose actually creates impact and legacy, how when we do things that light us up, it connects us to other people. We become that model of generational growth, and we affect the people locally around us, and that has global effect. So in the book, I talk about a few different characters in my life who are pursuing their little P purpose, but had a major effect on my life. One is Roman, the antique store owner who started selling baseball cards. He loved baseball cards. He pursued his little P purpose by selling them. But what he did is create a community where nerdy kids like me could come and meet friends and feel good about ourselves. And a lot of why I feel like I'm a successful adult is because he created that community for me. He never meant to, but he impacted me and hundreds of other kids by doing something that was deeply purposeful for him. I also talk a lot about my maternal grandfather, who I never met, who loved math. And his love of math was transmitted to my mother and me, and not only helped me get through a learning disability, but eventually helped me become a doctor who helped people. And there's this one case where I used my abilities in math to actually help save someone's life. And they were a pastor at a local church and they helped runaway kids. And so I can map that path of my maternal grandfather in his 1950s doing something that lit him up, loving to be a mathematician and a CPA. And his love, his little purpose, eventually led to changing people's lives in the 2020s, hundreds and hundreds of miles away from where he lived. And so that's impact, that's legacy. And I think that's kind of the hardest concept for people to connect with in the book, but one of the ones that's the most important.
And who is this book for exactly?
I think it's for many people, but specifically people in that messy middle, right? We're talking about 30s to 50s. Maybe they're getting their finances in order. They're having those big questions. What does it all mean? What does it mean to be happy? How do I live a life that's true to me? What might I regret one day if I don't pursue this now? A lot of them have kids, but also have parents who are maybe getting older and sicker. Some of them are from kind of, you know, some of them are millennials who are stuck feeling like the economy isn't working in their favor and they're more highly educated than almost any generation, but feeling a little bit lost. It's really for those people who are trying to figure out, how do I optimize my life? How do I really find this ephemeral thing called purpose and use it to build a life of happiness?
That's awesome. All right. So what's the best place for people to buy the Purpose Code?
Best place to either learn about me or either of my books is jordangrummet.com. That's jordangrummet.com. There you can find both my first book, The Taking Stock, as well as my second book, The Purpose Code, as well as links to all the other places I create content, including the Earn and Invest podcast. There's also The Purpose Code Substack, as well as links to my medical blog and personal finance blog that I've stopped writing at.
All right. We're going to link up to all that stuff so people could find it really easily. But I'm curious, Jordan, I listened to your podcast. What's coming up for this next year? You got some either themes coming up or guests, or what are you pumped about for next year?
I get pumped for almost every conversation. So I don't stick with specific themes. The idea is to find the most interesting people talking about the most interesting things and then relate them both to our finances and our lives. And so that can mean everything from interviewing a business person or an author to, I was just before I got on with you, I was interviewing educational specialists talking about the disengaged teen. So really it runs the gamut, but my goal is to have those really exciting, interesting conversations and show you all how it impacts your lives.
Fantastic. Well, we'll link up to all the places that people can find you, including so they could check out the Purpose Code and everything you got going on. So really appreciate it, Jordan. It's always fun to catch up. Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. All right, so you're at this Airbnb. How is it? Is it like the whole family there and everything?
So it's three of us, right? So my son is at college. So it's my 17-year-old daughter, me and my wife. And then my son's coming home for Thanksgiving and we actually have to move. So we were supposed to be back into our house Friday and this Airbnb is done on Saturday morning, but then the painters need like two extra days. So we're going to actually another one for another few days and then we get to go home. So we're like, we're nomads, man. Nomads in our own neighborhood.
Gotcha. I guess it's better to like, at least you're getting out of the house and not trying to like stay out of their way. And then there's dust everywhere. Cause you said flooring is what you're doing.
We've just been out for the last week so they could do the floors.
Okay. Gotcha. Is it pretty comfortable?
With all
place?
The dust and noise and et cetera. It's fine. It's weird not having access to about half your house, but otherwise it's fine.
Okay. Yeah. And like where I record here, you haven't been down here. You haven't been to my house, have you? I don't think
not to your house. Yeah, okay. I've been in the Longmont, but not your house.
It's pretty pleasant. My office is down here. There's rugs and stuff. It feels pretty comfortable. But we should probably finish it and like put a bathroom down here and a couple other things, so it's a little more convenient. But it would be a pain just having like people go through that. Like we would go somewhere for a month, let them work it out.
It is a pain. It is a pain. Everything takes longer and costs more than you expect. So.
Do you guys do a big Thanksgiving thing? Like, what do you all do at your house?
So we have plenty of family members in town. And so usually it's all my family. And, two of my siblings live here and my parents live here. And so we'll all get together in the same place. In this case, it's going to be our place if it's finished enough. And we'll do the turkey and the big dinner and, have a fun time.
Cool. We don't have relatives around here, but have found now that we've like stopped traveling back home, obviously it's a really busy time. always kind of hectic because our families in Atlanta live like all over, and you end up just driving all over the place. So we decided to not visit during holidays typically, but we have a nice sort of like Friendsgiving situation. Yep, other people do totally. The same thing. So Carl, Mindy and their family will hang out. There's some other folks. So we'll probably have like a dozen people, but you get to do the whole thing without the stress of travel. So it's pretty nice.
Yeah. Makes it better, I think. Makes it more fun.
Yeah.